KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
Tayshawn for bringing us on the air today. Tayshawn engineering the program. We appreciate him behind this. Jim Williams with you. I'm joined in studio by Zachary Fort. He's the president of the New Mexico Sports Association. Zach, welcome.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's good to see you. Tell us a little bit about the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association.
Thank you. So New Mexico Shooting Sports Association, or NMSSA as I like to call it, we've been around in New Mexico since 1935. So we exist as an organization that seeks to protect and defend New Mexicans' right to bear arms, both under the United States Constitution, because we have the Second Amendment, right, but under the state constitution of New Mexico, so have a right to own a firearm under the state constitution. So we believe really strongly that as New Mexicans, it is our imperative to stand up for our rights under our federal and state constitution. So that's largely what we exist to do. We also, you know, support our various, you know, gun clubs and ranges around the state and all the shooting sports that goes on. So we're still about shooting sports, but a lot of our focus right now recently has been about protecting shooting sport and making sure that people are able to continue to engage in those sports all the way from levels to senior levels and hunting as well.
Tell us about some of the opposition against firearms and shooting sports in general.
Well, thank you. So, you know, it's not hyperbole that the current governor of New Mexico is the most anti-gun governor the state's ever had. In fact, if she issued back in the fall of 2023, she may be the most anti-gun in the entire country. If people are not familiar with what she tried to do through executive order, she effectively tried to nullify the Second Amendment in Bernalillo County through an executive order, basically saying that, you know, you were not able to move, you couldn't do anything with firearms. I basically just had to stay locked up in a safe at your house. This is effectively what she tried to do. So myself and my organization, we took her to court instantly and got an injunction of ever being enforced. I don't know if police agencies planned on enforcing anything like that. But anyway, we were able to win that injunction pretty quickly. But that's to say, that's just an example of what she's tried to do. I mean, even Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, has never tried to do anything to the degree that Michelle Lujan Grisham tried to do in New Mexico. So that's a little bit of the backdrop. We have an incredibly anti-governor that we have in place right now, Michelle Lujan Grisham. We also have, there's a number of legislators, particularly Albuquerque, Las Cruces, and Santa Fe, who have taken very strong stances against firearm ownership, produced some really bad pieces of legislation. While we've been able to stop a lot of bad legislation, there's been some stuff that's gotten through, and we've been able to win some battles here and there, and there's still litigation ongoing on some of the stuff that has passed. But there's just this huge, and there's this really big push for more gun control in New Mexico, and that's kind of what NMSSA is. We're trying to step into that spot and be the voice for New Mexico gun owners.
You already know this, but KLYT Radio, I mean, we largely have people that believe in Jesus as Lord and Savior, and they're listening to the station because they're interested in topics like this. They want to have ways to answer questions of people that disagree. And so you're explaining now, you know, who are the people that are against firearms ownership. And we're going to get into the reasons they're against it a little bit and some of that in a minute. But I want to start addressing this topic from this perspective. People that you know involved in shooting sports in New Mexico, easily identified by their political party affiliation?
Absolutely not. You know, my organization, we're nonpartisan. We have Republicans, we have independents, we have libertarians, and we have Democrats. There's actually a member of the state legislature who's a Democrat, who's a member of my organization. So it's truly nonpartisan. There's a whole lot of independents involved in it too. So gun ownership in New Mexico, I mean, New Mexico is a beautiful state with a culturally diverse people. But within every single kind of demographic of New Mexico, there's a history of firearmship and people using guns for things like shooting sports, for hunting, things like that. So there's very long traditions, all of our different cultural groups here in New Mexico, firearm ownership. So then what we see today is we see all these different people being represented. And in fact, if anything, this push for kind of this anti-gun push that we see is we're actually being driven by, you know, people who come out of places like California, bring their politics with them when they come to places like New Mexico. So if anything, we're actually seeing the push really coming from people who are not, you know, native New Mexicans.
But you mentioned Michelle Lujan Grisham. Okay, she's elected by the people of New Mexico. But you mentioned that there's a lot of Democrats, which she is affiliated with that party, a leader of that party in the state of New Mexico, or one of the leaders. I guess my perception of politics is her job is to represent the wishes of her constituents, not do what she wants to do.
Yes.
And I want people to understand that people that are Democrats and other affiliated political parties in the state that are pro Second Amendment, but they're also pro being really safe. They're also pro taking care of your children. They're also some of them church-going people, but there's also believers. There's atheists, agnostic. There's probably people of other role wanting to learn about firearms, handle them safely, use them for self-protection, use them for sports. Do you talk about all of these issues in the in your shooting association?
Oh, most definitely. And, you know, to bring up the point about, you know, people who care about safety, a lot of people who care deeply about Second Amendment rights, precisely because they care about safety, because they want to be able to be empowered to be the responder, because they want to be able to exercise their right and to have that self-determination that the right to self-defense grants you. We've been given an incredible right in this country. If you look at the history of, you know, mankind and the right to be able to have the self-determination of self-defense, that's an incredibly powerful right that we've been granted as New Mexicans. And it's one that I think that we cherish and that we promote. And that's what people drive. That's in large part what drives a lot of people to be pro-Second Amendment, to be pro-guns, because they want to be able to be their own first responder, for the lack of a better term. They want to be able to take charge and say, I'm not going to wait for the government to, I don't need the government to try to protect me. I can just go where I want, as I want, because I don't need somebody else to protect me. I have that ability recognized by the Second Amendment to protect myself where I go.
Now, are there people, maybe the same people you've already mentioned, that are anti-gun, anti-Second Amendment, that would say there's something bad about being able to be armed, defend yourself?
General, I mean, what largely the arguments kind of that we often hear from the other side boil down to is some iteration of, you know, firearms can be used to do something bad. So therefore, you know, if we can reduce the number of firearms, we can reduce the number of bad things that happen in the world.
Is there some logic to that?
People use firearms as a commission of a crime, but at the same time, there is a gun who commits a crime. As far as I'm aware, a firearm has never committed a crime on its own. If anybody has an instance of a firearm robbing a bank without somebody holding it, please send it to me and let me know. But that's where I think we differentiate. Say, you know, a firearm is a tool. At the end of the day, all a firearm is a collection of metal and maybe wood or plastic. That's all that it is. It's a tool. It's an object. There's nothing spiritual about a firearm. There's nothing magical about a firearm. It's just metal, wood, and plastic. That's all that it is. It's in the hands of the people when something good or bad can come of that firearm. You know, you could use that firearm to shoot an elk to feed your family. You could also use that firearm to rob a bank. So it's about what the person holding the firearm chooses to use that firearm for that ultimately determines whether that firearm is used for good or evil. A firearm, like, it's a neutral object. It's just metal, wood, and plastic. That's all that it is.
You mentioned before we started the show, and I think anybody can Google this. I mean, let's say there's so many millions of guns that are on the United States that people own.
Yeah.
What percentage of those are used for bad things?
An incredibly, incredibly small percent. I don't have the stat in front of me, but from my understanding from, you know, talking to industry sources, we probably have something in the neighborhood of 400-ish million firearms in the hands of American civilians today. Now, obviously, these firearms are in various states and various conditions, whether usable or not usable, whatever. But that's about, I mean, we have more... Based on the stats I've seen from people who work inside the firearms industry, we have more firearms than people in the United States. In terms of the number of firearms actually used in the commission of a crime, it's an incredibly, incredibly small percent, because typically what happens is once a firearm kind of makes its way onto the black market, whether it's obtained through an illegal straw purchase, which is basically someone misrepresenting who the firearm is going to be for, or someone is giving it to someone who they know is a prohibited possessor, or that firearm is stolen, which is what we typically see in New Mexico, is stolen firearms. Once the firearm will make its way onto the black market through an illegal act. So I just want to be clear that, you know, either an illegal straw purchase or a stolen firearm, like, that is a crime. So crime has to occur to take that firearm from being kind of the hands of, you know, ordinary peaceful citizens onto the black market. And it's a relatively small number of firearms are actually on the black market. It's a tiny fraction of the total firearms, because what you find is one firearm is often used in multiple crimes once it makes its way onto the black market. You know, it may go its way to one gang member who other members of the gang will use, or they may sell it to somebody else within their own gang. And the just things like that. So it's an incredibly, incredibly small percent of firearms are actually ever used the commission of a crime. And typically some other crime like an illegal straw purchase or a stolen firearm has to occur to take that firearm onto the black market.
Tell us a little bit about your organization. You're a 501c4.
That is correct.
Which is a little, that designation allows you to actually be involved in the political process, mm-hmm. both in the state and federally.
Yeah. So what we, we are a 501c4 not-for-profit organization. The key difference between a 501c4 and a 501c3, as Calvary Church, I believe, is a 501c3.
Yes.
So a 501c3, so you, when you donate money to them, it can be deducted on your taxes, mm-hmm. For people who choose to do that. When you donate money to a 501c4, it's still a donation, but you can't deduct it on your taxes. But the difference for us is that it gives us greater leeway with speaking out about issues, politically speaking. So when an election comes around, we don't tell people who to vote for, but we say, here's Gay Vasquez, the congressman down the Southern District. Here's his voting record on firearms. And, here is, the last election was Yvette Harrell, and here is her record on firearms when she was a state representative. We're not telling people who to vote for. We're just presenting the facts as anybody can go verify them on their own to voters. So we're allowed to do things like that. So we don't endorse candidates, but we do tell people, here's their voting record. Here's kind of on this specific issue. So it also, during the legislative session, we're incredibly active. That's kind of the big push that we have every year in our organization is getting really involved in the legislature and being basically every committee, every bill, every time showing up to advocate for New Mexico gun owners.
What are some things that you faced in the recent legislative session?
I think as I told you the other day, we call these kind of the kitchen sink legislative sessions now, because a lot of times we'll be having, we're tracking.
Meaning they're throwing the kitchen sink.
They're throwing the kitchen sink at every gun bill they can possibly imagine. So in the last couple sessions, they basically tried everything. They've tried bans on rifles, bans on magazine capacity. The kind of a new concept that we're seeing being pushed really hard by State Senator Joseph Cervantes out of Las Cruces is by trying to single out firearm retailers and manufacturers for increased civil liability that no other type of business in our state would have. In other words, trying to hold them civilly liable for the actions of a third party. And in fact, one of the versions of a bill Cervantes introduced, you didn't actually have to have actual damages to sue a firearm retailer or manufacturer over something. So you didn't actually have to be a victim of a crime or anything, but if you were just knew of a crime and you felt personally victimized by that or something like that, you could actually sue a firearm retailer manufacturer. So that's one of the new concepts we've actually seen being introduced really heavily in New Mexico that hasn't actually been as present in other states. And that's kind of why we have to show up and so advocate every year. Because, when we talk to these retailers about these bills that are coming through, they tell us, our insurance company said, we will not insure you if this bill passes because there's no way we could ever insure somebody when you're liable for an act that somebody doesn't have that somebody without any damages can sue you over something.
Zachary Fort, the president of the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association, is in studio with us. Last question for this segment. He's going to be with us all the way up until 2 o'clock. Last question for this segment is, you mentioned this particular attack on firearms and the Second Amendment rights. Are those attacks directed, are the bills that are proposed based on some empirical evidence that this type of legislation will actually control crime, or are they just ideas that somebody came up with and so they want to try them?
They're largely based on ideas. There's a couple studies that they toss around in which we can kind of, if we bring up one of these studies, we can kind of do a deep dive into it. But there are studies that do get promoted, typically they'll come out of, left-leaning groups that say, if you pass gun control, you're going to be safer. Now, what I would say is that empirically, New Mexico is a more dangerous state today than we were 15 years ago. New Mexico has a lot more gun control laws today than we did 15 years ago. It hasn't made us safer. Colorado is a much more dangerous state today than it was 15 years ago. Colorado also has a lot more gun control laws today than it had 15 years ago. So there's kind of some of the empirical evidence we point to. I use Colorado because they're our neighbor to the north. And sometimes we find the state of New Mexico kind of following behind Colorado by a couple of years on a number of different topics. So yeah. A lot of times you or your listeners spend a lot of time up in Santa Fe, but the number of times someone says, well, what did Colorado do? I just feel like their state legislators are kind of punting their legislative responsibilities, just whatever Colorado did a few years ago.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, we talk on this show about education, we talk about medical care, we talk about, you know, Second Amendment rights. Probably haven't talked enough about Second Amendment rights because I know a lot more people involved in shooting that haven't gotten involved in the process of sticking up for what they believe. And so one of the things I want to point before we take a break is you can go to NM for New Mexico, NMSSA for New Mexico Shooting Sports Association.org, NMSSA.org, and you can sign up for a newsletter that you provide information about what attacks are coming and what types of things. And I would say our audience should pray about those things.
Oh, definitely. So if anybody can go on our website today, nmssa.org, and you can sign up for our newsletter. And during the legislative session, we are sending very regular updates a couple times a week, and oftentimes in real time, and what's going on in Santa Fe, what bills are being introduced, and where those different bills are. So we're sending out a ton of information during the legislative session. We have the information for the committees where these bills are, how to get into contact with your state representative, state senator. That way you can give them feedback. And also, if you want to show up and testify, either in person or virtually, we put all that information in there too, because we believe that getting New Mexicans involved in the legislative process is a good thing for our cause.
Yeah. And I always have a tendency to want to, you know, the data suggests that in the faith community, and I'm going to kind of include people of all different faiths, half of us are registered to vote, which that really bugs me out of the gate. We should all be voting. And then number two, half of the people that are registered to vote actually vote. Hey guys, if you're listening now, we got to prepare to vote. We got to be part of the process. A lot of these elections are won by 1,000 votes. A lot of people think it's, oh, wow, there's, you know, two million people in New Mexico, so who am I? One out of a million votes. But not 2 million people vote, you know, or however many eligible voters there are.
Yeah. And just to kind of break this down for people, like, you know, oftentimes we find on the House, New Mexico House of Representatives, you know, there's 70 members. A lot of times these bills are coming down to just a few votes, you know, three or four people within the 70. And if you look at those districts, you know, you've got those three or four districts, you know, some of those districts only won by, you know, a few hundred votes. So you're talking about 1,000 votes in New Mexico that can actually sway the legislature one way or another in some of these districts.
Isn't that interesting?
So it is really crucial that people get registered. I know we're in Albuquerque right now. There's a lot of legislative districts in Albuquerque after they did the redistricting that are actually really close. If you go back and look at the 2024 election results, you know, the entire state house is up for re-election in 2026 in New Mexico. So I would really encourage people, you know, get registered to vote and get informed.
I love it. Zachary Fort, the president of the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association, in studio with us. He'll be with us till 2. We're going to say thank you to our sponsors, and we do appreciate them very much. We also appreciate you listening to KLYT. We'll be right back.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect.
Jim Williams with you this afternoon on ABQ Connect. Zachary Fort, the president of the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association, in studio. We're talking about Second Amendment rights. In the first segment, I ask you if shooters, people that are using firearms, could be identified in New Mexico by their political party. And your answer was absolutely not, because people of all different parties are participating. We also know people of all different parties in some way might be objecting to firearms. So we acknowledge that. And today we're getting your opinion. And by the way, I am happy. I've asked the governor's office and others to come on and in past legislative sessions and tell us why they're adopting these, you know, let's ban this firearm, let's ban that firearm, how they think that's going to reduce crime. And they've always declined. And I'm not here to ambush anybody. I'm just here to ask questions and to find out, you know, what a perspective is. Do you find that to be common?
In terms of trying to the lack of engagement from the other side.
Well, you're willing to come on today and share your opinions.
Yep.
I've not been able to get anti-gun people to come on and share their opinions. Even, you know, you can listen to every radio interview that I've done, which I've been on this station now for 8 years. And there's not one time anybody could accuse me of ambushing or being argumentative. I'll ask pointed questions, which I don't think is inappropriate, but I don't argue with people. I just want to hear what they have to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's not uncommon that, you know, the other side will typically stick to media outlets they view as more friendly to themselves. That's certainly not uncommon. But our perspective is, you know, we want to get our message out to everybody. We don't really care if you agree with us or not. We want to get our message in front of you because we strongly believe that the more people we get our message in front of, the more people we're going to have who are interested in supporting us. So, you know, just personally, I've done interviews with numerous outlets where they're probably not, they're certainly left-leaning, all the way, you know, from local stuff here, all the way to, you know, I've spoken with reporters at NPR because I believe it's important to, like the national NPR, not just like, you know, your KUNM in Albuquerque, which yeah. I've been on sure. KUNM a number of times here in Albuquerque, but we just believe it's important to get in front of everybody because we believe that what we are supporting is the correct way to view this issue. And so we're not shy about what we believe, and we're going to put out a reasonable case for someone to believe in the Second Amendment rights.
Yeah. What do you think about the Second Amendment? Can you give us just a general idea what you think it was intended when it was written and whether that's applicable for today?
Good question. It's a deep historical question if we want to dive into it. But I believe that the Second Amendment, as it was originally drafted, it protected a right to own weapons for ordinary American citizens. There's a lot of historical case. The cases at the Supreme Court, which are typically spoken about in the Second Amendment, you know, the DC versus Heller, New York versus Chicago versus McDonald, New York State Rifle Pistol Association versus Bruin. Those cases are more recent. However, there's case law that goes back into the early 1800s that talks about owning a firearm as being an individual right to own a firearm. So there's case law from, you know, not the Supreme Court, but from lower courts, like I said, that goes all the way back into the 1800s that discusses an individual right to own a firearm. And additionally, we also see in state constitutions that were ratified in the early 1800s, a lot of those state constitutions included an explicit right to own a firearm in the state constitutions. And some of these, they actually put the right to own a firearm in the state constitution right after the right to free speech in the state constitution. So what were they trying to do with some of these state constitutions back in the early 1800s, you know, not long after the Second Amendment was ratified? They were trying to emulate the United States Constitution. So the Second Amendment has always, from the beginning, has always been interpreted to be an individual right to own weapons, whether that be a firearm, other things like that. But we strongly believe, you know, firearms were in common use at the time. You know, the people who fought in the Revolutionary Army, a lot of them, though, they brought their own personal firearms with them when they went to go fight. So we strongly believe that the Second Amendment it protects a right to own a firearm, and that's what we advocate for.
I found it interesting doing some cursory reading about socialism in various countries, like the USSR. One of the very first things that happens is the citizens' firearms are taken away.
Yeah.
As kind of an initial process. And I think there's a lot of people that, you know, there's people that are well-intended to represent our interests. And I'm very thankful for our legislators. I'm very thankful even for people that I don't wholeheartedly agree with, like Michelle Lujan Grisham. I appreciate her service. I appreciate that she's trying to do her best for the state, but I also wish that there was a little more openness to, you know, how to spend money. You've got a $6 billion surplus. There's some ways we ought to spend it. So I'm kind of, you know, getting off in the weeds, but I just think that we all need to humbly approach any leadership position. Now, I don't think being on the radio makes me any kind of leader, but for this hour, I'm kind of leading the discussion. I could do that arrogantly, or I could do that humbly and ask questions, which is, I think, the correct approach, because I think that we all need to listen to what you have to say. Like I think when I ask you to come on, I really am concerned about having you tell us what God's given you for us. I don't want to direct your opinions, right? like I could have given you a list of 10 things. These are the things we're going to talk about. But I sent it to you in advance. You had some input into it. And I try to leave open enough questions that, you know, you can really tell us what you think.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I do too. In our next segment, I want to let everybody know, Tayshaun, are you able to take calls? We're gonna open up the phones if in our next segment you would like to talk with Zach. And please be nice. I mean, even if you disagree, call, tell us your opinion, ask Zach's opinion. It would be nice for this to be a very cordial discussion. Our phone number is 505-338-5790, and we'll start taking calls as we get into our next segment. Two more minutes left in this segment. What are some of the things that a lot of people, I would imagine, that object to firearms are either afraid of them or have no experience with them? Would you say that's an accurate characterization?
It's generally correct, yeah.
Okay. Would you recommend that before people form all their opinions, that they actually maybe get with an instructor or a group of people and actually try it and see what they think?
Most definitely. I've found, you know, personally with people that I know, that for someone, if you want to change your opinions about firearms, don't just sit there and lecture them. Take them to the range, let them handle a firearm, let them see in it what an AR-15 looks like, let them shoot an AR-15. Because what I found is it doesn't necessarily change their opinions overnight, no, but it begins to help them understand firearms in a better way, that, yo, this is, it's a tool. It can be used for a lot of fun. It can also be used for evil if that's what someone chooses to do with it. But at the end of the day, a firearm is nothing more than a tool in the hands of a person who chooses how it's going to be directed.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Zachary Fort, president of the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association, with us today on ABQ Connect. He'll be with us till 2 o'clock. If you'd like to speak to him and ask him a question, you can give us a call at 505-338-5790. We'll be back now in a couple minutes after we say thank you to our sponsors.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect.
Thank you for joining us on this nice Monday. Jim Williams with you, Zachary Fort, the president of the New Mexico Sports Shooting Association, with us today. Are there a lot of people, what age do people get involved with shooting sports that you've seen?
It's really all ages. I mean, there's youth shooting that goes on that we support. You know, we've got a lot of great 4-H programs in the state that do youth shooting. There's a lot of new shotgun clubs. Mm. So you've got people getting involved as kids. You've also got people getting involved a little bit later in life as well. I mean, you know, you go to a gun store like, you know, Calibers on the Saturday morning, you're going to see people of all ages, you know, all walks of life. You know, they're at the range that they have at Calibers in Albuquerque and also the store they have there too.
Now, do you think if a child, let's say a 12-year-old, learns how to handle a semi-automatic 9mm pistol, are they more likely to commit crimes down the road because they learned how to handle a firearm early in life?
You know, this was decades ago. We actually used to have guns in schools where people, because they would teach rifle and shotgun in schools to kids. We used to have guns in schools on purpose that the kids got to use.
They didn't bring their firearms to school. The schools kind of controlled
them. And some of them actually would bring firearms to school. Some of them would bring a firearm on, like, you know, rifle rack in the back of a truck. So we actually used to have a lot of guns in schools, and yet we didn't have a problem with, you know, with school shootings or things like that. So if anything, we've actually tried to take away access from teaching kids how to use firearms, how to be responsible with them. Now, I'm not saying, you know, if you have a 12-year-old child, just give them a handgun to keep at home. I mean, whether for someone who is under 18, I believe their parents should have discretion in how and when they should, you know, approach firearms. It's not going to be the same in every single age. And I believe the parents should have discretion on that.
I do want you to clarify this. I think you would be very staunch on making sure that parents are making it so that their children don't have access anytime they want them.
As a parent of small children, you're always looking out for dangers. Yes. I mean, you've got a little boy, that kid, if there's a way to get in trouble, if there's a way to hurt yourself, he's going to find the way to do it. So it's your responsibility to make sure, you know, drowning is actually, you know, what is one of the biggest risk factors for small children. You know, you have to make sure they're safe in every circumstance. I'm not going to leave my child by a pool unattended. That is being reckless with small children. And that could be considered child, up to the point of being child endangerment if something happens to that child. So it's about making sure with any kind of risk that threat or risk or threat that's posed to your child, whether that's a swimming pool, whether that's a knife, whether that's a firearm, whether that's living by a really busy road. You know, there's homes that, you know, open up to, you know, really busy roads with speed limits of 40 miles per hour. Is it, it's about understanding all the risks that your children face and making sure that you're protecting your children from all these different risks, firearms being one of them. Store your firearms in a way that you see fit in your situation. I don't believe in mandating that people do certain things certain ways. Like, I believe very strongly in training, in firearms training. I think everyone, myself included, needs more firearms training. I don't want to make it mandatory. I don't believe in a government mandate that you have to have X amount of training in order to own a firearm, because I don't believe that's the way rights work. So I believe people need to be as safe as possible. I just don't like mandating the exact way someone has to do something in terms of like firearm storage or when you can or can't teach a child how to shoot a gun, because I believe that there's judgment involved and the parents are the best advocates for their children.
If you have a different opinion, you'd like to talk to Zach, call us at 505-338-5790. I'm going to emphasize maybe a little different perspective. So I think, you know, I have five children. I had to take all of those kids and had a blast with this. It was a little scary sometimes, but you had to give them 50 hours of driver's education training where they're driving with their parents. This is before, you know, they take driver's ed, but then you got to have 50 hours of training before you can get a license, and then you have to take the test. So I view a vehicle as a deadly weapon. Mm-hmm. If you're not careful with it, and there's so many people that die in car accidents, you have to be careful. You have to get good instruction. You have to put that time in. Well, this is where I differ from you a little bit. I don't think you necessarily have to, well, I don't know how to say mandate or whatever, but I think people need 50 hours of training, you know, whatever the number is, but they need to learn what they're doing. They have to have some experience. I have been around people that I was nervous around because they're accidentally flagging you with the muzzle of the gun and different things. And the people that I know that have had even a minimal amount of training, they're so cognizant of always having the muzzle down range, always making sure that all of the spectators behind the firing line, listening for commands, you know, cease fires and, you know, the range is hot. All of those different commands are really brought to their attention. And I think people have more fun when they know they're absolutely safe. So I might differ a little bit, but I don't think it's like this big laborious thing. I think you just need some experience going out and shooting a few times.
Most definitely. And I would really encourage you, if you haven't been around firearms before, talk to somebody who, you know, is works around firearms, is around firearms. Or if you don't know anybody, look up a concealed carry instructor. They would. There's a lot of concealed carry instructors who would be happy to show you how to use a firearm in one of their classes. And you can do so really easily. There's a lot of instructors who specialize in people who don't have a lot of experience around
firearms.
And they're
not necessarily taking a concealed carry class, just taking a general firearms class.
Yes, and there's a lot of introduction to firearms classes. There's also a ton of resources online. I mean, my organization, we've even put kind of a real basic class. You know, during COVID, we saw a huge surge of people, you know, buying a firearm for the first time during COVID. So one of the things that we did is, you know, working with some concealed carry instructors, just did real basics, you know, some videos and things like that that we put online. Now, an online class is not as good as having somebody there putting things in your hands in person. But, you know, during COVID, there just weren't a lot of options for other training. So we tried to, you know, help in, you know, use some of our funding to kind of, you know, put some materials together. So people who are new firearm owners, you say, here, you know, here's kind of something you can go look at to help familiarize yourself with a firearm if you're a handgun owner for the first time. But also, you know, talking about ranges, you know, it's actually incredibly rare to have. Now, do incidents happen at ranges? Yes, they can, but it's also incredibly rare that it happens. And one of the things that I've always appreciated about ranges, and, you know, myself included, is that when you know how to operate firearms safely, if you see someone doing something that's not safe, you know, people will take accountability and say, you know what, hey, this, I need to go talk to this person, whether it's the range person or the range safety official or somebody else. You know, people will step in pretty quickly and say, hey, you know what, let's make sure everyone's safe here. Just, you know, taking accountability, not only for yourself, but also responsibility for the people around you to make sure everyone's being safe. So I want people to understand it is incredibly rare to have any type of safety incident at a range because things are normally run very, very safely. There's range safety people. There's also people there who wonder if I see someone doing something unsafe, I'm going to talk to them about it because I don't want to see anybody get hurt with a firearm. Now, they may not always like it, but I don't really care. I'd rather somebody be mad at me than somebody get hurt.
Yeah. Well, and that's one thing I appreciate about the community is they're all about everybody's safety. And I've seen some people get corrected, and yeah, they get a little embarrassed, but they actually end up with more fun because now they understand, you know, what's going on. And that's not done in a harsh way. It's just done kind of directly, and we got to take care of that right now and make sure everybody's safe. I kind of feel like you and I, two guys talking about, you know, guns and safety and shooting. Zach Ford is the president of the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association. Our audience is largely women 35 to, say, 55 years old. There's a lot of women that are involved in shooting mm-hmm. sports, aren't there?
Oh, definitely. There's a lot of women who are involved. You know, Dawn Omdor, who I've known you've had on this show before, yep. She's a friend of mine. She's phenomenal. She's, you know, someone who's out there out shooting everybody out.
Well, she's a competitive shooter, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Yeah. She's a competitive shooter. She's phenomenal. There's a lot of really good concealed carry instructors in New Mexico who are women. And a lot of them actually, because they understand that sometimes it can be intimidating for a woman to be around firearms for the first time, they'll set up women's only classes. Jody Newton, who I believe is still teaching classes. She's out in these mountains. You know, she's does stuff for women where, you know, for women who may not be comfortable around firearms, you haven't had experience. So look up, you know, women, there's concealed carry classes in New Mexico that are put on by women for women, because yes, women own the same firearms that guys do. They shoot the same stuff, you know, Dawn's out shooting everybody at the range.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, the technical capabilities and athletic capabilities even. I mean, you start talking about three gun and some other things that requires a little athleticism because you're on the move and, to me, it's amazing to watch it, mm-hmm. number one. You know what's always amazing to me is how well I've seen both men and women shoot clays. Because mm-hmm. I am terrible at that.
We'll have to get you out sometime.
Well, I'm okay with the birds that are flying away from me. Uh-huh. That's not a problem. But the cross patterns and stuff,
you gotta learn to put the bee just, I don't know, depending on how far it is, you got to learn to put the bead out in front of it. And actually the way I normally do it, and I'm not a professional, I don't actually use the bead too much. I'm just more using the barrel generally to kind of gauge. Cause if sometimes you're focused on the bead, you're a little getting too granular there and you're not moving your firearm across fast enough. Cause you got to get in front of it. And pull the trigger at the right time. But
well, look, I know how to throw a basketball ahead of somebody and lead somebody, but shooting a skeet moving across the horizon at, you know, 80 miles an hour is a little tougher.
Yeah, it can be tough, but I believe in you if you ever want to get out there sometime. But, you know, and I actually want to come back really quickly to the topic of women and firearms because a firearm is the great equalizer. Mm. A man carrying a 9mm handgun and a woman carrying a 9mm handgun have the same power.
Mm. Yeah.
They do. Yeah. It's the 9mm handgun. Nothing's going to hit harder than a 9mm in that case. So it's a great equalizer. It puts women on equal footing with men in some type of confrontation. So that's why we see a lot of women in Albuquerque, you know, choosing to become firearm owners, choosing to become concealed carry permit holders, because they see what's happened and, you know, they understand, you know, they're out there, you're at the grocery store with your kids and there's something that happens. You want to be able to respond and be able to protect themselves and their children. So that's actually why we see a lot of women becoming firearms owners, because at the end of the day, the firearm is the great equalizer.
Yeah. And frankly, though, in a public setting, you have to know what you're doing. And so you need to practice. Mm-hmm. You need instruction. And that's why I kind of believe that people have to work out a little bit.
Oh, I completely agree with you that people should get training. Everyone should get more firearms training. I think I may just differ because I'm a little bit of an absolutist on it, but you got to just make sure that people's right to own a firearm is not being interfered with by something else. So, but I totally agree. People need more training. So if you own a firearm, even if you're good at it, you can always be better.
There are those who believe that if the government doesn't have a rule about something, then people aren't going to behave themselves. And I think you would totally disagree with that.
Yeah, I'm from an ideology that cherishes individual liberty. So I would say we have too many regulations in a lot of areas, not just firearms. But at the end of the day, I believe, you know, in that people's, you know, they're making their own choices and you can't just correct everyone by creating laws. Because if you could just create a law to make all problems go away, like it should have been done. They've had numerous governments throughout world history that had the ability to make any law they could have ever possibly wanted to, and yet none of them were ever able to eradicate
When we come back for our last segment, we're going to talk to Zachary Fort, the president of the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association, about how you can engage with his organization and take advantage of the resources. A lot of stuff on social media, which I don't have a clue about. We'll be back with more. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect.
Zachary Fort, president of the New Mexico Sports Shooting Association, in studio. And as you're listening to Zach this afternoon, you may end up with questions. You can go to their website, which is nmssa.org for the New Mexico Sports Shooting Association, or you can give them a call at 505-990-1802. But Zach, tell us about how people can engage with your organization through social media. And what does that even mean?
So on social media, we are on Facebook, X, and Instagram as New Mexico Shooting Sports Association. So what we use social media for is to help make sure people are aware of what's going on this day, oftentimes in real time, because social media, it's really easy. It doesn't cost us anything. We've been able to build up some substantial following across our social media platform. So what it enables us to do is, you know, put out stuff in real time, in very real time, at zero cost to people, particularly during the legislative session, because, you know, that's kind of the real big thing that we do every single year, is advocate for Mexico gun owners during the legislative session. The other really big way is through contacting people through email. Because that's another really great tool there as well, because you're putting things a little bit longer format. We're also launching a podcast now too, where we get to talk about stuff in a little bit more depth as an organization. So it's an NMSSA specific podcast, and kind of the purpose of that is to kind of take people a little bit deeper dive. And what is the NMSSA?
So if they go on to Apple Podcast and put in NMSSA, is that how they find it?
I don't know for sure if we're on Apple yet. We are on YouTube.
Okay.
And there should be a link on our website, nmssa.org. So I know we're going. This is a really new thing that we're doing now. We've seen there's some demand for people who want to, you know, take a little bit deeper dive, because, you know, in a podcast format, you can go easily go half an hour, 40 minutes on something and kind of really dive into it. Whereas, you know, you can't, if you write an email that's going to take you half an hour to read, you're not going to read that email. I'm not going to read that email. Mm-hmm. So that's just kind of something that we're doing now to kind of put stuff out in a little bit longer format, take a deeper dive on these different topics.
Have there been bills introduced in the legislature that you've had an effect on helping defeat those bills?
Absolutely, yeah.
And tell us what that process is.
So, you know, we're able to stop most of the bills that are introduced. I mean, if you have, you know, 15, 20 different gun control bills, you probably have one or two at most actually getting through. So we're actually able to stop most of them. Some years we're able to stop all of them. We're not able to stop every single bill every single year. And of the ones that do get through, we look for litigation opportunities as they arise.
So stopping them, does that mean a lot of people, maybe even people that are listening today, would participate in that process?
Most definitely, because what legislators need to hear is from their constituents, whether you voted for the person, whether you didn't vote for the person, or whether even if you didn't vote at all, if that person is your legislator, they represent your interests in Santa Fe. So what we really encourage people to do, because we want everyone to get involved in this, what we encourage people to do is to take the time to let your legislator know, your legislator who is there to represent your interests in Santa Fe, how you feel about a certain topic. So that you can do that a lot of different ways. You know, you can email your legislator, you can call their office. Oftentimes you'll get their secretary if you call their office. You can also...
Does that actually help, though, our representatives actually care to hear from individuals?
They do. You know, if you email Javier Martinez, the Speaker of the House, Javier Martinez may not switch his vote because someone who's not his constituent emailed him. But at the same time, if you talk to your legislator, another thing we actually really encourage people to do is, if you get the opportunity to talk to your legislator outside of the legislative session, you just invite him out for coffee. Just say, hey, you know what? I just like to, you know, you're my legislator. I'd like to get to know you better and kind of talk about some of the issues and the way you voted on certain things. A lot of legislators are open to that, including, you know, we have some members up in Santa Fe who actually will meet with some of their very progressive legislators in Santa Fe. But because these are members who say, you know what? I'm just here to have a reasonable conversation with you. Let's talk about this stuff. And what we found is that sometimes legislators are actually kind of receptive to it on this, because even if they're not voting, the way we want them to, they're understanding better where we're coming from, because a lot of legislators don't actually have a very strong background in firearms. Firearms law is actually incredibly complicated. There are tens of thousands of firearms laws in this country at the state and federal level. So there are a lot of gun laws out there. A lot of legislators are not aware of the whole body of firearms law that already exists out there. So just take the time to educate them, approach them with humility. You know, I understand it can be really frustrating to deal with a legislator who doesn't want to vote, who isn't going to vote the way you want them to. But at the same time, you know, I've actually seen some very progressive legislators say some surprising things on bills and actually kind of take a position on it, because there were years of people, you know, saying, hey, you know, I think you're looking at this the wrong way, and just kind of educating them, working with them. And you may not get the result you want on that bill, but over time you can influence people. You can get them to see, you know what, we know what we're talking about. We have kind of the background here with firearms law. So we can kind of help sway those legislators over time. So absolutely. You know, you may not get the immediate result that you want, but if you're persistent, if you're respectful, and if you're knowledgeable about your topic, you can over time begin to really kind of work on that legislator.
You know, I like the way you're phrasing that, because you're not just challenging us or calling us to action about Second Amendment rights. You're kind of saying, be a voter, be mm-hmm. involved in the process for all of these issues.
You know, if more people got involved in stuff, I think you actually see a lot of change, because, you know, the other side, so to speak, they're really involved year round. Now, I know they have donors who help fund these different kind of network and web of organizations that they have, but the other side, oftentimes, that, you know, the faith community may find themselves on the other side of that, they're really involved. They're involved year round. They're not taking a break because the legislative session's not in session. They're really involved. So I encourage, you know, the faith community as well to get involved year round, to be in contact, to be respectful, try and build relationships with people, educate them over time, and also work with your community to get people organized as well. Because if we got more people involved, I think you could really see stuff get shaped the way you want them to.
Yeah, I've also had a couple people on, one being Steve McKee. Steve is a former owner of McKee Wallwork here in Albuquerque, which is a big national advertising marketing firm. Steve's very knowledgeable, now writing for the Heritage Foundation and stuff. And Steve told me some things that I was kind of surprised at. He said, look, we are responsible for who's in political office in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And that's the people that vote and the people that don't vote. We're responsible. So if there's somebody in office that we wish wasn't in office, it really comes down to us mm-hmm. and our participation. And you made a point earlier in our interview about how few people are voting and how few votes can really influence the way an election goes.
Yeah, it can come down to 1,000 votes, because you're looking at, you know, a couple hundred votes from a couple districts, and those are the seats that sway a bill that passes through the state house. And that's how close some of this stuff can actually be. So you may think your vote doesn't count, but it absolutely does. And we really encourage people to get out there and vote, because if you're not voting, you're just implicitly saying, I'm okay with the status quo. That's effectively what you're saying, is the status quo is fine. I don't think we need to vote to change it.
Do you think church groups ought to talk more about these kinds of things?
That's a good question. I'm not a church leader, so I'm not going to tell a church what to talk about or not to talk about. But I do believe it's important that people talk about, you know, how do you engage with the culture? Voting is a way to do that. Also, but I don't think it necessarily stops at voting. I think it's also, you know, like what I talked about earlier, having meaningful engagement with legislators. You know, talk to them outside the legislative session. Say, hey, you know, I'm your constituent. I have a couple questions on these bills.
What you're talking about right now is what you could be doing, right?
Is what you could be doing, you know, and have a conversation with them, you know, keep it respectful, understand that, you know, they may have a very different ideology than you, but you might be able to find that over time you can actually have more of an impact than you realize.
A lot of fun talking to you, Zach. There's another hour we could cover easily with all the topics. One of these days, we're going to take a deep dive into arguments for and against and data that's out there. But until then, I wish you the best and thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.